Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
What we laughingly used to call the free world has taken leave of its senses. Every freedom we used to boast about is now being crushed. 700 people have been arrested at universities across the United States for trying to stop a genocide, for demanding a ceasefire. And liberals are cheering it on. In fact, it's liberal politicians, governors, and senators, and in the White House itself that are responsible for it. And those arrested read like a veritable who's who of my guests on my shows over the years. Elderly ladies, presidential candidates, philosopher queens. It's unbelievable what's going on. And Elon Musk goes native. He has turned turtle and is brutally cracking down on anything that challenges Netanyahu's narrative. Just at the point that the missing prosecutor, Mr. Khan of the International Criminal Court, is about to issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and his gang. It's all shaping up to be the mother of all talk shows. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
The path to the Democratic Party's annual convention is beginning to look like 1968. In 1968, the goons of the then liberal President of the United States, Lyndon Baines Johnson, at the height of the bloodbath he had intensified exponentially in Vietnam and in Cambodia, the goons of his goon, the mayor of Chicago, Richard Daley Sr., clubbed and gassed hundreds of thousands of anti-Vietnam War demonstrators, clubbed them senseless into the ground. The people on the protest sang, "The whole world is watching." They weren't actually not in 1968. That depended upon, well, friendly owners of giant media corporations who were few and far between back then. But the whole world is definitely watching what's happening now in the run-up to Joe Biden's coronation as the Democratic Party's presidential candidate for the elections in November. Because now, as opposed to then, the whole world can watch, is watching. And what a sight it is. Elderly professors, women, lady philosophers, people who are eminent in their academic field and advanced in their years are being brutally assaulted by uniformed thugs on behalf of principals of universities acting on the orders, usually of Democratic Party governors and politicians. It is truly an unedifying sight. And it reads like a who's who of my guests. One of my guests tonight was arrested over the weekend. He's mercifully free. We'll soon see if he was clubbed. We'll see if he has been injured. And 73-year-old Dr. Jill Stein, a Jewish woman, a friend of mine, a guest of mine, Dr. Jill Stein, standing to be president of the United States of America, was severely assaulted by thugs who rammed a bicycle into her before carting her and her campaign manager and her deputy campaign manager off to the jail. It's all being done to protect a man who is about to be the subject of an international arrest warrant for crimes against humanity, for crimes that border at least plausibly on genocide, according to the International Criminal Court. It is truly astonishing that the media continues to support a man about to be issued with an arrest warrant for war crimes, crimes against humanity. Not that you would know it from reading the British media, and I don't suppose the American media is any different. Lie after lie after lie after lie paves every day their coverage, not just of the genocide, but of the worldwide protests against it. Lies about the numbers who are there. That's where they report it at all. Lies like the Mail on Sunday today showing two Holocaust memorials covered up by tarpaulin, that the Mail on Sunday lied, were covered up by the police because they might have been desecrated, forcing the Metropolitan Police into a very rare rebuke of Britain's biggest national newspaper, who said that covering these monuments up had absolutely nothing to do with them. They were covered up, as they are often covered up, in demonstrations and other events, in case any harm might have befallen them. At a stroke, killing the idea that the hundreds of thousands of peaceful, democratic, anti-war protesters would somehow have stooped to desecrate a monument to a massacre of millions of people. 6 million of them Jewish people. You see what they were trying to do there. They were trying to fix in the readership's mind the idea that the protesters hate Jews, that the protesters love what happened in the Holocaust. They're trying to fix in the mind of the public that the protesters are violent, are vandals, when nobody has been arrested on these demonstrations from amongst the mass of millions of people for anything more than minor litter offences. It is a big, giant lie. But it is a lie that is being pumped out by bought and paid for American politicians and British politicians who continue to refer to these protests as hate marches, and the marchers as hate marchers, when in fact their only demand, to my consternation, because it's not my only demand, their only demand is for a ceasefire in a conflict which has slaughtered and maimed well over 120,000 people, including historically significant massacres of doctors and patients still in their medical scrubs, still in their pajamas from their hospital beds, found with their hands tied behind their backs and executed at close quarters in a grotesque war crime, a grotesque crime against humanity. And it's continuing until this very day. These protesters at Harvard and Yale and NYU and Brown's and hundreds of universities and colleges all over the United States is, of course, comparable to the great mass movement that arose in America when there were far fewer pictures and far less footage available to them of the great crime that the United States was then carrying out itself. They have every right under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution to protest and speak freely against an action with which they profoundly disagree, but they are being brutalized and arrested for the simple act of sitting down, for the simple act of putting up a tent in which they intend to sleep and to bear witness to what they consider to be a major crime, a crime which the ICJ has already said is plausibly the crime of genocide itself, the highest crime in the human legal canon. It is extraordinary how Western public is being attuned to the destruction of the very freedoms that we were told were what marked us out from dictatorships and authoritarian regimes. And I don't just refer to the brutalization of elderly female university professors, of 73-year-old Dr. Jill Stein, herself Jewish. I don't just refer to that. Elon Musk has finally turned openly, publicly, in support of Israel and is now presiding over a witch hunt and large-scale suppression of alternative points of view on his platform, Twitter, which he told us had been returned to the free speech camp. Sure, you can have free speech on many things on Twitter, but not on Israel-Palestine. It is extraordinary, isn't it, that Elon Musk, who once prided himself on having a neutral view on great international conflicts, has become a paid-up member of the Israel lobby, a paid-up member of the Zionist lobby. He coined one thing, you know, if he'd said it's because of the advertising blacklist that I have suffered, that I can no longer speak my mind freely, if he'd said this is driven by commercial extremities, it is forced upon me, I have to algorithmically crack down on videos of war crimes that are or were previously proliferated. If he said what is undoubtedly the truth, well, that would be one thing. But in the words of Bob Dylan, in the epic story of poor Hattie Carroll, "You who philosophize disgrace." That's what Musk is doing today. He's philosophizing disgrace. He says that the idea that the weaker party in a conflict automatically deserves public sympathy and the stronger party in a conflict, which in this case means Israel, is somehow guilty of the crimes of which it is accused, is a philosophical misnomer. In that case, Mr. Musk, support a ceasefire. If there's any ambiguity about who's right and who's wrong, at least support the demand to stop killing people whilst you philosophize and work out who's right and who is wrong. But he is cracking down on those who are seeking a ceasefire. There's so much going on, it's very difficult to know where to go next. But I'm going to go to my own country. It is reported today that little Rishi Sunak, the here today, California tomorrow, spring-heeled, elevator-heeled prime minister, unelected prime minister of Britain, is going to make it illegal for any legal process in Britain to be begun in the British courts concerning Britain's role in supporting Israel. I have it on good authority, and I'm going to be asking about it in the House of Commons this week, although I will get no satisfactory answer, that Israeli bombers are calling in at our airbase in Cyprus. I want to know what they're calling in for. Is it a cup of coffee and a cigarette, or is it to load new bombs with which they kill innocent captives in their open-air prison, as David Cameron once called it, the Gaza Strip to you? I want to know just how deeply Britain is involved in the killing fields of the Gaza Strip. But I fear that I will get no answer, even as an elected member of Parliament, because written parliamentary questions have elicited no answer as to what British Royal Air Force jets are doing flying over the Gaza Strip. Are they identifying targets? Are they collecting intelligence that they're handing over to a government whose head is about to be charged by the International Criminal Court with war crimes, with crimes against humanity? Is that what our brave airmen are being used for? I want to know why Britain is continuing to send arms and military components to a killing machine that has already been found plausibly guilty of genocide and may now be about to receive arrest warrants from the ICC. I want to know just exactly what my tax money is being used for, and many other people in Britain too, not least the millions who are protesting every single weekend for more than 6 months against the atrocities that they can see, whether Elon Musk likes it or not. At least until what happened to TikTok in America happens to TikTok elsewhere, happens to every social media platform elsewhere. Then you'll have to come to my website, georgegalloway.com, to see it. But I will not be silenced. And I will continue, both here on the Mother of All Talk Shows and on my additional show, Have It Out with Galloway, I will continue to highlight these crimes and Britain's role within it. Some people ask me, why are you so occupied by the Palestine question? I answer thus. The situation in Gaza right now is the moral center of the world. There is no room for hiding in this question. You are either with the mass murder or you are against it. You may not be in favor of the ruling party in the Gaza Strip. I wouldn't vote for them myself. You may not even necessarily support Palestinian statehood or the right of self-determination of the Palestinian people, although I wholeheartedly do myself. But if you are continuing to support what has become a murder spree unprecedented since the Second World War, unprecedented in this sense, that the people being murdered are in a cage from which they cannot escape, unprecedented in that the vast majority, more than 70% of those being murdered are women and children. Women and children. Unprecedented in the sense that the Western countries, these beacons of freedom and democracy and human rights, who are never done lecturing other parts of the world on these three things that identify us as opposed to them. Unprecedented in the sense that a gangster government has turned off the water, turned off the electricity, turned off the aid, except a tiny trickle of enough flour to make enough bread for the people to stay alive long enough to be murdered from the air. Unprecedented murder spree. You're either with it or you're against it. And what you decide will determine your fate on the judgment day, if there is one, as I believe there is, but will determine how you are seen by history. And if you're a politician, or if you're a hireling, lickspittle, so-called journalist, spewing out the lies of the Israel murder machine, your reputation will be judged on what you have done and are doing over this last 6 months. I promise you that. We will hunt you for the rest of your professional lives. Our children will hunt you for the rest of your professional lives. And when you're gone, what history will say about you is what you did, said, and didn't do or say while this murder spree was going on. The British political class and the American political class are already damned, government and so-called opposition. Anyone who votes for either of them next Thursday, or whenever the general election comes, whenever the presidential election comes, anyone who votes for those responsible for this murder spree will have a lot of blood on their hands. Fasten your seatbelts. This is the mother of all talk shows.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Now, Bryce Green was one of those arrested yesterday. I told you, all of our best guests have already been arrested in the American student protests. Let's see if he's been manhandled, if he's been mistreated. Bryce Green is an independent writer, political analyst, and contributor to Fairness. You're a bit in the shadow there for me, Bryce, so I can't tell if you're suffering any bruises. But tell us, please, what happened to you this weekend?
I'm not currently injured, but I can say that what happened this weekend, like in many areas around the country, was that heavy police force was used to crack down on a nonviolent protest. This Thursday, organizers at Indiana University put together a divestment coalition and declared an encampment in what is typically designated as the free speech zone at our university. And in keeping with the solidarity encampments going up all around the country, all around the world, we put up tents, we set up stations and had teach-ins and tried to make the space one of resistance and protest and understanding of Palestine and solidarity with those people. And for the crime of putting up a tent, the university, the police department, they rolled in there with not just armed goons. It's one thing to show up to a peaceful demonstration with a bunch of police officers. That's bad enough. But they had, they called in state troopers with riot gear, with armored cars, with choppers in the sky. And they even had a sniper on the roof of the Memorial Union building overlooking the meadow. And again, this was just for peaceful protesters. None of the protesters were threatening police at all, but they were still met with such a heavy force. And all of the protesters we have found to be arrested are currently safe, although one has gone to the emergency room, per my sources, for injuries sustained while being arrested, but I don't have as many details on that. But I can say that the university is up in arms and that their administration is allowing this sort of behavior from its local police department and escalating all the way to the state police department to the point where they're pointing snipers directly at 20-somethings in a park with a tent. None of it makes sense, but it's not meant to make sense. It's meant to chill the speech of people fighting for Palestinian rights. It's meant to be a message and a warning that if you get out of line, if you try and get any ideas that maybe you don't want your institution to be complicit in genocide, or maybe that you want to take hold of your life and not be a part of something evil, then you need to shut up or meet a truncheon. And that's the message that the Israelis have been trying to impart on the Palestinians for decades. That's the message that America has been trying to impart on the world for decades. And that logic translates into institutions like universities, where the administration, which is, you know, just as political as any other organization and with that much power, the administration doesn't want to rock the boat. They understand where their bread is buttered. They understand that the path of least resistance is to continue supporting genocide, but they don't care. Regardless, the protesters have continued for several days. They were met with police violence again yesterday. The same getup. You had choppers, snipers on the roof. You had armored cars and riot police. And this is when I was picked up. And in fact, it seems clear based on a police scanner recording that I was personally targeted for my organizing role. And they picked me up, arrested me, processed, booked, and I received a 5-year ban from the university's campus in Bloomington, Indiana. Hopefully, this will all be worked out through the processes. I don't think this kind of thing will stand. But this is the level they're willing to go to keep students from organizing. We have three demands: the resignation of three of the administrators, the adherence to BDS guidelines, and the removal of the partnership with Crane under those BDS guidelines. These are very simple things, but the university said that if students are asking for that and they have a tent, then we can send in effectively an army.
Imagine being the dean who asked snipers to go up on his university's roof and target those students with high-powered rifles. No rifles have yet been fired, I understand, although rubber bullets have been fired, but no serious live information, though people can be killed by rubber bullets, have been used. How dangerous a situation is it?
Well, to clarify, no rubber bullets have been used on this campus, to my knowledge. But that doesn't mean the situation isn't dangerous. Like you said, the snipers on the roof. We had a picture just yesterday of an administrator escorting two snipers, clearly in a military combat getup, with rifles on their backs, up to the tower. That doesn't make people feel safe. And we know that we have cops rolling around and rolling down their windows, looking up with the lights on, just to intimidate the students and the protesters. But any administrator on campus, any faculty member, any staff member will tell you that the safety risk doesn't come from students in a park with a tent. It comes from armored vehicles, with riot gear, with snipers on the roof, with choppers in the air. That's where the security risk comes, and that's where people feel dangerous. But of course, the university will justify its actions by saying it's in the interests of the security and safety of students, blah, blah, blah. Serious people understand that that's nonsense. And they care about suppressing pro-Palestine speech at a time when Palestine is undergoing its worst attack in its history.
Four people were killed on the campus at Kent State in 1970, gunned down by the National Guard. I don't suppose President Johnson actually wanted four young people to be shot dead. But once you militarize a situation like that, you're no longer in control of it. A trigger-happy cop up on a roof might fire a round and kill, mightn't he?
Yeah, I said we're a faulty safety and a sneeze away from a tragedy. Oh, if you create the situation where a pressure cooker situation where anything could set off an explosion, you're responsible for that. And if you're going to use those sort of repressive measures against students, then you really have no business being an administrator. You have no business doing anything with education or students or young people or anything. It's a very dangerous situation that they've created. They've traumatized a large number of students. They've shocked the campus, who now have to watch their campus become something of a military base. But again, this is all in the service of protecting IU and America's relationship with the state of Israel, and protecting their relationship at a time where Israel's committing a genocide. That's what's so terrifying about all of this. Again, if this was a protest for anything, it would be horrifying to see the sort of military force meted out against students. But this is a protest against a genocide, one in which Indiana University is directly complicit, one in which America and Americans are directly complicit. And the fact that they are not even stopping to think about their complicity, starting to think about how they might protect the people of Gaza, how they might alleviate all these wars, all these issues that are caused by American imperialism, they instead turn the tools of American imperialism onto its very citizens.
The optics for President Biden in the run-up to the presidential election could scarcely be worse, could they?
Well, they could always be worse, but if you are actively supporting a genocide, and if you are spitting in the face of the people that you consider to be your base, then you don't seem to me like someone who wants to win the presidency. And that to me has been my conclusion, that Joe Biden and the Democratic Party don't care about winning the election. And it makes sense on some level because they don't have any vision for governing the country. They don't have any significant changes they want to make to the world. They see themselves as just maintaining the status quo. And the status quo simply won't work. And people don't like that. And if that's what you're running on, then you don't really care if you win or lose. You still have a job. All the consultants, they still have jobs. The politicians still get their pensions and paychecks. So they don't care about winning. So if that's where we're headed in this fall, it's no one's fault other than the Democrats.
I'm left wondering how they think this is going to work. I mean, if you thought that the way to dampen down the rising pro-Palestinian feeling in your country, the very last way you could imagine that it would succeed is by doing what they've been doing. It's much more likely to make pro-Palestinian feeling rise rather than fall and begin to win allies, surely, amongst those who might not have been allies before, but recognize treating the sons and daughters of the nation like this cannot possibly be right.
You're exactly right. And I talk about this encampment and this popular university movement as not only a space for education on its own right by reading books, talking to people, but it's also an education about how state power works and what the state priorities are. If the state is willing to, and if your institution is willing to, send an army to stop students from setting up a tent, well, some people are going to have to wonder why. Why is that? That doesn't make much sense to spend tens of hundreds of maybe even millions of dollars to equip a chopper, to arm all these troops, to pay for gas for 50 squad cars, to have a drone in the air, to have snipers on the roof. That's expensive. Why is the state spending all of these resources to stop people from putting up a tent? Well, it's because they're powerful. It's because students have the ability to shift public opinion, that people, the popular struggles, have the ability to change the world. And the second they realize that power, they become dangerous. And the state is willing to use extreme violence to put down that power and to prevent people from understanding that they have it. And so learning that, you can't really learn that through a book or just by being told. It's something that you have to watch and experience and learn for yourself. And that, I think, is one of the largest effects, will be one of the largest longstanding effects of this protest movement. Students are understanding how power works, how empire works, what their role is in it, and steps to combat it. That's an encouraging step for my university and for America writ large, I think.
Bryce Green, glad to see you in one piece, albeit banned for years from your own university. Let's hope that indeed get worked out in the process. Let's take a quick break. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Now, Manal Adli is the founder and director of Mint Press News and Behind the Headlines. And she regularly makes headlines when she's on my show. I'm glad to say she's back. Manal, most welcome. We spoke with Bryce Green extensively earlier in the show about the protests. You may want to supplement what he had to say, but I wanted to ask you about the gigantic bonanza that the United States taxpayer just gave to the Ukraine, $61 billion, in excess of everything that's been given before, to little Zelensky and his corrupt regime in Kiev, but also the $26 billion that was given to a man who we're led to believe is about to be issued with an international arrest warrant. What kind of largesse is this when I see another train derailed in the United States just this very day? Because of the crumbling infrastructure and ailing economy and mass poverty that exists in the United States?
Well, what we see, George, is that the United States is ruled by a very elite military class who use our taxpayer money to not fix our school system, to not help the poor in this country, to not rebuild our roads, and not to feed the growing rates of hungry people in this country, but to expand their endless war machines. And it is horrific to say that President Joe Biden is once again showing the true face of U.S. imperialism by approving this kind of funding for the U.S. proxy war against Russia, to fund Ukraine, and to send more money to an out of control apartheid state that is openly committing genocide in Gaza. Netanyahu is facing corruption charges. Israel is at the International Human Rights Court facing genocide charges and hearings. And what this kind of funding for Israel and Ukraine just goes to show that the moral depravity of the so-called rules-based international order is once again being exposed to the masses. The Democratic Party in general is also showing its true face as a bloodthirsty war party. And so that's why we are seeing people revolt across the streets here, across student campuses here in the United States, because they are sick and tired of this cognitive dissonance where we have the president of the largest U.S. empire in the world standing in front of people saying that they want to ensure that Israel protects civilians and that they don't like what Israel is doing and that Joe Biden is really tired of Netanyahu, while actively funding the genocide, while handing Israel the very bombs to commit these war crimes. And just in recent weeks, we've learned about these mass graves that have been found with medical workers, with patients still tied to the connected to their IVs, babies, children, doctors wearing their uniforms, and they are zip tied and they have been found to be shot at point blank. This is what this money is going towards. This is not what democracy looks like. This is what a bloodthirsty regime who supports endless wars for profit looks like. We see dead children, and these weapons manufacturers who are profiting from this, like Lockheed Martin, like Boeing, like General Dynamics, they see their profits increase. But what we're seeing across college campuses is truly awe-inspiring, George. It tastes and smells of a revolution. It's grassroots resistance. It's a globalized intifada. A generation of young people are setting the example of what true disobedience looks like in the face of one of the most horrific human tragedies of our time, which is Israel's genocide in Gaza, where the death toll has now reached over 40,000 civilians. But let's not forget that what Israel is doing in Gaza is just an outward expression of what U.S. imperialism represents. Israeli terrorism is brought to you by U.S. terrorism. These actions of what Israel has done in Gaza is what the U.S. has done in Iraq and Afghanistan before this time.
Well, and in my time, in many other places too, in Korea, in Vietnam, in Cambodia, in Laos, so many places have been laid waste, and mainly by so-called Democrat politicians. I've never had any illusions that the Democrats were somehow preferable to the Republicans, but it's vivid now, isn't it? The crimes you've just talked about in Ukraine, in Gaza, and now against the American people and their freedoms, they're all happening under Democratic Party rule.
Exactly. It really begs the question, what kind of system do we live in when an institution like these university campuses can call the police to brutalize these students for opposing genocide, but there's no authority that they can call, these students can call to on the institutions that are supporting this genocide. And this is the true face of the Democratic Party, in that they will go to the end of the world to defend and protect Israel. This is the ugly face of capitalism, and this is the ugly face of a fake democracy that is controlled by a ruling military class. And it's 100% backed by Joe Biden himself and the Biden administration. I mean, look at the House Speaker who called the protests at these university campuses as being endorsed and supported by Hamas. They're painting them and framing these protests as anti-Semitic, as making Jewish people on campuses feel unsafe, where I have been embedded at the University of Minnesota student campus here in Minneapolis. And I will tell you, George, that not only is our university campus here in Minneapolis, but the majority of these campus encampments have been led by hundreds of Jewish students who say, "Not in our name." And we are seeing police violently respond to these unarmed students who are chanting "Free Palestine." They're unarmed, and all they are doing is sitting in circles, holding hands with their tents up, doing die-ins and chanting "Free Palestine" and demanding that their schools divest from the very companies, weapons manufacturers, including Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, General Dynamics, and other defense contractors who are responsible for dropping bombs in Gaza and in other places too. They're calling for an end to divestment from companies that are profiting off of the war in Somalia and in Yemen as well. And the police are responding with tasers, with batons. They're bearing their rifles. And we've even learned that snipers have been spotted on the rooftops of universities, pointing their snipers at students. Police are tackling middle-aged women to the ground. Yesterday, I tweeted a video showing police shoving a bike very aggressively against 73-year-old presidential candidate Jill Stein, who was protesting with students at Washington University in St. Louis, Missouri. This is not what democracy looks like. This is what fascism looks like. And we have free speech in this country until we start talking about the war machine. I cannot begin to imagine if the images coming out of the student encampments now with the police brutality. We're coming out of Venezuela. We're coming out of Russia. We're coming out of Iran. You know, our media and our government would have endless calls for regime change because they would describe those protests as being fascistic. And yet it's happening right here in the land of the so-called free. The police as an institution, we have to remember, emerged out of slavery. It's a racist institution. The police exist in this country to ultimately protect capital and the capitalists' ruling class. The police claim they are here to protect and serve, but they are protecting the property of the rich and protect their monetary interests. And so despite the threats of police, George, these students are not backing down. They are escalating their civil disobedience, and they're taking example from university protests at the height of the Vietnam War and South African apartheid. And I just want to talk a little bit about my experience at the University of Minnesota. I've been embedded with the students at the University of Minnesota. I've been one of the only journalists on the ground covering that encampment. And it's given me an inside view of what's happening on the ground across the country who are protesting their companies' investments in companies that are profiting from Israel's genocide in Gaza. And these students are taking inspiration from 1968 anti-war protests that erupted on student campuses against U.S. war against Vietnam and student protests in the 1980s against South African apartheid. In 1985, American universities such as Columbia and the University of California were calling on their administration to withdraw investments from companies tied to the apartheid regime in South Africa. A six-member panel of trustees was formed immediately after that to end the blockade and to consider divestment, pulling back its investment in companies tied to the apartheid regime. And that year, they completely divested. And so historically, Colombia has set an example of how civil disobedience is an active and effective tool to make change. But today, Colombia's president, Nemat Shaki, has violated academic freedom, despite 80% of students at Colombia polled showing support for divestment from Israel. And she has led this crusade to quash protesters by calling in the NYPD. And again, she represents the interests of the 1% ruling class. And most of these presidents at these universities do, and most of their boards represent the interests of the ruling class. I mean, she herself is an economist, a former high-ranking official at the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and Bank of England, and she's a former president of the London School of Economics. And now, the Israel lobbyist campaign here in the United States are pushing for the FBI to surveil students. They're urging Congress to reauthorize FISA Section 702 to spy on pro-Palestine protesters. And we have to remember that at the height of apartheid South Africa, the Anti-Defamation League did spy on student activists, including Desmond Tutu, and they shared that intelligence with Israel's Mossad. So I worry that we may be headed in that direction if we're not there already. But truth be told, George, this crackdown on student protesters shows just how terrified Israel is, how terrified the ruling class are of these protests. I mean, these students are the future of this country. And the fact that they're protesting, well, there is a Democratic president in charge, while the Democratic Party is in charge, shows that young people cannot be propagandized anymore when it comes to war. What the war in Gaza has done is allowed people to break through the fog of war. And so people who might have supported, you know, sending weapons to Ukraine because, you know, Ukraine's right to resist, are now seeing that U.S. wars from top to bottom are based on lies and are for profits. And so this younger generation is seeing that, and they're taking it upon themselves to say our tuition cannot be used to fund these wars, and especially not the war that we're seeing right now that's developing on our smart screens, the genocide that we are all witness to.
Well, undoubtedly, all of that is true and very well explained by you. Just one last question. We both caned the Democrats. But this package could not have cleared the House if it were not for the support of a significant number, at least, of Republicans who only yesterday were telling us how they hated the snowdrops. They were so free speech. They demanded the right to say anything they wanted. No one had the right to be triggered by it, and all the buzz words. They also said they were America first. Turns out they're Ukraine first, Israel first, not America first at all.
It's war first, George. War is first. And that's what both parties represent. Both Republican and Democratic parties in this country might as well be the same party. We are ruled by a dictatorship here, which is the ruling military elite, and they run and control both parties. There is not a war, a single war, that both parties will not vote in favor of. And so what's really incredible now is that people are moving away from this two-party duopoly. And they are saying that they are ready for another option. We have been propagandized as Americans to believe that voting for a third party is a wasted vote. We have been propagandized in the last election that if we vote third party, that that's just a vote that's going to go for Trump. Democrats are now trying to use that same propaganda again. But this time around, people are smart enough to know not to believe that propaganda because they see that both parties are going to give us the same thing. And the dumbest thing that Americans can do is vote for Democrat over and over again and expect different results. The dumbest thing Americans can do who are on the right is vote for Republicans and expect for something different to happen when both parties are going to give us continuous and endless wars. And so I'm really excited for this time. I know there's a lot of horrific things happening in Gaza and around the world, but in these dark times, a light always shines through that there are other options. And so we have to remember that we don't just have a Republican and Democrat to vote for. We can vote for third party. And just imagine, George, if all of the people who are disgusted by the two-party system put that energy and voted for a third party, like somebody like Jill Stein, for example, who was there at the student encampments, risking her life. She's a 73-year-old woman, but she has been involved in politics for decades. And she has been consistently opposing war, and she has called what Israel is doing a genocide, while people like RFK are being advised by Israel lobbyists who claim to be anti-war and free speech, but have no problem supporting Israel's genocide in Gaza. And so let's take this as an opportunity to put our voices and our power together to unite as a country and to vote third party, whether it's Jill Stein or another candidate, because I know there are some other candidates like Cornel West and candidates for the Socialism and for Liberation Party that also oppose Israel's war. And so this is an opportunity to send a message to the two-party system that enough is enough. And we, as America, a country that has millions of people, should not only be represented by a two-party system. We should have the opportunity to vote for other parties if we are to truly call ourselves a democracy. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm sure these fools put quite a few extra votes in Dr. Jill Stein, our friend, in her column at the next election. A 73-year-old woman, a presidential candidate, being assaulted and arrested on Joe Biden's watch. Manal Adli, as always, thanks for joining us on the Mother of All Talk Shows. Some comments, me too big. I recall when Mayor Kahana, the Jewish Defense League, would visit Milwaukee in the 1970s. There would then mysteriously appear swastikas on tombstones, etc., all to squeeze money out of the ADL, etc. And Anthony Wedgwood, great name, says, I knew from day one that a multi-billionaire was never going to save free speech and Twitter. and birthright free, says George. What's the UK government's stance on Sudan, the proxy war the world is ignoring? I don't actually know if they even know that there's a war going on in the Sudan. Where I stand is this: all foreign interests should butt out of Sudan and let the Sudanese people determine their own future freely. Coming up after a short break is Arnaud Devalet, political consultant, author, and international human rights attorney. There's never been a better time to talk to Arnaud, I promise you. Stay tuned.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
You are listening to the Mother of All Talk Shows podcast with George Galloway.
Arnaud Devalet is a political consultant, author, and international human rights attorney. I believe this is the first time we've had the opportunity to meet, in which case I'm honoured that Arnaud is on the Mother of All Talk Shows this evening. Arnaud, thanks for joining us. I said right at the beginning of the show that the three things that we used to be told in school, told by our parents in my case, that we stood for was democracy, human rights, and freedom of speech. All three of them are being severely tested, at least to say the very least, right now, aren't they? What future for them, Arnaud?
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, George. It's an honor. I've been a big fan of you ever since your searing rebuttal you, 20 years ago on the U.S. Senate floor. And, you know, kudos to you. It's interesting because we find the same individuals 20 years later in a different context, albeit with some variation. But whether it's what you've been doing or what people like Scott Ritter, who we may refer to him because he was arguing against the WMDs before Joe Biden in a memorable event. And so in that respect, thank you again. And to answer to your question, I think it's a constant struggle. The machine, as your previous guest referred to it, the war machine, is a freight train which has no time to consider itself into ethical values. And so it is up to us, civil society actors, to exercise due diligence as much as possible, notwithstanding, you know, the difficulties that this may engender. And free speech is, one of the key features of, advocacy. And if we cannot call, a spade a spade, then there's no point in pushing forward any kind of agenda. And so it's those are heady times. And we need to basically understand that a lot is at stake these days. And, people have to basically understand that democracy is not just but a concept that one puts on a wall like a portrait or a painting. Robert Dahl, in his essay on democracy, stressed that much. You need to be involved. You need to be a citizen. You need to remain informed, understand what the issues of our times are, and get involved. No matter what happens, get involved. If not for yourself, do it for your children.
If there's anything left of democracy, human rights, and free speech in the West today?
Well, George, in thus far as people being bent on protecting, defending their freedoms, and free speech is one of the most cardinal of those freedoms, a freedom without which advocacy cannot be effective. I believe that, you know, there's always hope. And as I was referring to before we got so rudely interrupted, Robert Dahl wrote a essay called On Democracy, in which he basically said that democracy as a concept must be nurtured and tended to. Democracies cannot be just left on the shelf and admired once in a while. You have to basically participate in the public debate, the res publica. You need to remain informed, and as a citizen of the state, you need to participate to the fullest. If you don't do it for yourself, at least do it for your children. They will thank you for it.
Freedom of speech is the cornerstone, isn't it? Because you can't have a democracy if you can't freely argue for your point of view. And that freedom of speech, once in the hands of a tiny handful of oligarchs, it now turns out is in the hand of a slightly larger and different group of oligarchs, but with the same cast of mind, that you can freely speak about who should be the dog catcher in your town, maybe even freely speak about whether your tax should be a cent or a penny or two less or more. But on the great international issues of conflict and interest, you may not speak freely after all.
Well, this is basically what the system would like people to believe. But we've seen, as your previous guest mentioned, that the Vietnam War eventually was brought to an end because of the constant mobilization of civil society and people at large. To be sure, the system tried to aseptize and clean up the perception of the masses of people by proceeding with the embedding of journalism and by making sure that none of the casualties were to be filmed being brought back at night on military airports. So the system learns from its own mistakes, but ultimately the internal contradictions are such that they will not be able to keep postponing and keep reframing the issues alongside their needs. When defense budget of a country outlasts the defense budget of the 10 next countries, obviously there's got to be somebody who gets left on the pavement. And medical care is an issue. Education is an issue. Inflation is an issue now, as we see it in the wake of the backfiring of the heaviest, most substantial sanction program ever inflicted on a country, i.e. Russia, in time of peace, to make sure, you know, to underline it. And the whole ship now is collapsing. It's almost like trying to put on a suit, and it's actually too small for you. And they are panicking right now. They are trying to somehow keep control of the entire narrative. But as the saying goes, the road to hell is paved with a good intention, and they are finding good out intentions. Right now that it's the machine that they are themselves.
Tell me
now
this,
completely.
Arno, you're amongst your many, many other accomplishments and your writing, possibly the most famous of them, but you're also an attorney. Whatever happened to international law? We have the ICJ, which is referred to by the British government officially as a foreign court, even though we were actually one of the founders of it, have had a justice on it, and are signatories to it. It's now dismissed as a foreign court. What about the decision of the ICJ that Israel was plausibly committing genocide and gave them 30 days to prepare for trial? Whatever happened to that?
Well, I think it's a symptom of a larger problem. You may recall that the United States federal government officials are now referring to the rule-based system as opposed to the UN charter system, thereby leaving everybody else kind of holding the bag in disbelief as to what exactly the rule-based system means. And this is something that we've seen the last 25, 30 years, these constant assault on the rule of law as a general concept. Once the rule of law disappears, we talk often about the unipolar moment. The United States might have had the opportunity to be this paragon of law-abiding citizen in the international arena had they had enlightened leadership 30 years ago. They might have preserved for themselves some sense of legitimacy as the way they perceive themselves, this indispensable nation. Unfortunately, the craving for power and power's sake eventually won out the day, and all the great principle and great proclamation that once upon a time used to be the sloganeering, you know, of U.S. elites has completely been put aside. And I think you and I will remember that the leading up to the war in Iraq was a watershed moment in the dismantling of the international order. And to the extent a powerful state, if not an hegemon, engages in violating international law in such an egregious manner, obviously it opens up the proverbial can of worms. And this is where we are right now, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, neither the U.S. nor Israel are signatories to the International Criminal Court. Yet both this evening are heavily leaning on the ICC to stop them from issuing arrest warrants for the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. It's come to something. I mean, there's contempt of court and there's real contempt of court, isn't there?
Yeah, it also shows that the ICC, unfortunately, seems to have been more engineered and created for the collective West, as we call it today, to go after its targeted opponents in the international arena. I mean, obviously, a good case could be made that a lot of African heads of states have been singled out by this institution. And there was never quite a ratification brought to it. And it's almost a miracle that the membership remains the way it is. In the context of Ukraine, it's also very interesting to see the rush with which the Office of the Prosecutor of the ICC basically lent all its resources to the collective West to go out on a junket and look for Russian war crime, therefore feeding into the narrative that the Russians were not obeying the Geneva Convention, for instance. So increasingly, the ICC
one law for us.
Now looks, yes, one law for us and one law for the others. And we saw the speed and the rush with which an international arrest warrant was issued against Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin on some very shady accusations. I won't get into it on this program. But in the light of what we've seen the last 6 months, it's almost an absurd notion that no warrant would be issued against Benjamin Netanyahu, especially in the wake of the findings of the ICJ.
Arno, my apologies for the interruption in our flow. We'll have you back again when there are fewer interventions in normal service. Thanks for joining us on the mother of all talk shows. I want to take the legend that is Norma for my last call. Go ahead, Norma.
Hello, George. We're a bit over time. I've got one just comment to make and one little flippant one, if I've got time. No, I was listening, obviously.
Yeah.
And I thought, if it was the Taliban, that were committing these atrocities in Afghanistan, our media would be just up in arms. But no, the Western world, I mean, they just want to close our eyes to the brutally quashing of these protests about the outrageous situation that's happening in Gaza. And, I mean, it just defies all understanding. That was my first comment, but I will just make the second one quickly. You know, you've got this program, Have It Out With George show. I wouldn't like to contribute, George, because I'm in the early evening, I'm in my little nest upstairs, and I watch your show in bed. So I like being invisible.
You could always put your housecoat on, and we'll make allowances What a lovely ending to a show which has dealt with some of the biggest issues it's possible, conceivable, to deal with. And I hope you found it interesting. My apologies for the interruption to the show. And let's investigate who or what was responsible for that. The coming week in Parliament, I will be speaking even more than I did last week, so more than three times. That's guaranteed. I have a question to the education minister tomorrow about the involvement of parents in their child's curriculum, in which I'll be making, I hope, points that most of you at least will agree with. The complete inability, it would seem, of parents to head off the ever-growing threat of early sexualization of our children in the curriculum. The teaching to our children things that we either don't think they should yet be being taught, or even more serious, teaching them things with which we profoundly disagree, raising the question of whether they are our children or whether they are the state's children. I'll have two questions the next day to the foreign minister, not the foreign secretary, Lord Cameron, because neither I nor any other elected member of parliament can question or even set eyes on Lord Cameron. Not only does Britain have an unelected prime minister, we have an unelected foreign secretary. The two most important positions in the land are held by people for whom no one has ever cast a vote. And one, arguably the most important one, David Cameron, literally cannot be questioned. But I'll be questioning his deputy about the imminent, and by Tuesday maybe even underway, genocide in Rafah, a city of 1.6 million people, most of them living in tents or on the street itself, with Israel poised for a mass violent invasion of 1.6 million people, unarmed, undefended, with no Western government apparently able or willing to come to their aid. And then I've got a speech on Wednesday in Parliament on the so-called right to die, by which they mean the creation in Britain, as exists elsewhere, of a suicide industry, and the facilitation of the committing of suicide, which could well become the promotion of suicide, the encouragement of suicide, and against which I shall raise my voice as powerfully as God will allow me. And we'll speak about it all on Wednesday night on the Mother of All Talk Shows at the same time, 7 p.m., London time. I hope you'll join me then, and I hope you'll spread the best bits of this evening's edition of Moats, my monologue, and some of the great contributions made by our outstanding guests. Thanks for being with me. See you Wednesday, God willing.